This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two here on a Monday. Glad you can be with us. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Emory Hunt. We'll talk to him about the NFL. What a great weekend it was. Well, great if your team made the playoffs, or great if your team showed up on Sunday and made a move in the playoff hunt. You know, maybe being a three seed instead of a four, whatever it may be. But it was exciting overall. If you pull yourself back a little bit, no matter how good or bad your team did, if you just pull yourself back again, this league delivers like no other sport we have in the country. The national unity that we have on this sport is second to none, and it's not even close. We do not do this national come together for these kind of games during a regular season like we do in baseball or in basketball or whatever. We just don't. And last night you could feel it. You could feel the entire country watching the exact same thing. It's not necessarily a social media thing. It was just this feeling of how important it was. And I think yesterday was, last night was a game of curiosity. If you, if me and you could play to a tie, would we play to a tie? Or would the competitive juices kick in enough that we would give you a competitive game? And boy, did the Raiders and Chargers give us a competitive game. The, whatever the exact opposite is of let's just play to a mutual tie, that's what the Chargers and Raiders gave you last night. It was hard fought. It felt like the playoffs were on the line, like winner take all, and there better be a winner. It really felt like that. Now, when it did get to overtime, I did honestly think that the Raiders with the ball, before the Chargers called the timeout, would kneel out the clock and run out the clock and get the tie and get out of there. And it was, you know, Chris Collinsworth kept alluding to that all night long. Like, these two teams, you know, why risk it? Why not just go for the tie? Both of you'd be in. But again, competitive juices do kick in. And when you're an athlete that has kind of raised yourself up to being a professional athlete, settling for a tie isn't exactly the way to go. But here's the thing. The reason a tie does work in that situation is that it benefits you too. The Raiders wouldn't have done the Chargers a favor. They would have solidified their shot at getting to the playoffs as well. It was one of the more unique situations I've ever seen in the league. And it was one of the most well-played games I'd ever seen in the league. We'll get to the good, the bad, and the dumb next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Monday as we get you ready for the week. And boy, we're going to have so much fun this week gearing up for the playoffs.
Yeah,
so what is the good of the day?
The good of the day. The only thing that could interrupt NFL Week 18 was a gravity-defying block by Ja Morant.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah, Ja Morant is great.
It came across my timeline yesterday, or, you know, like, it actually got an alert on my phone. And I said, well, I have to check this out. If, you know, you get a block, that's an alert on your phone. And I'll paint the picture for you. He lost the ball, gathered his senses, went back. It was a two-handed block. He literally caught the ball out of there, looking like Dwight Clark catching it in the back of the end zone. He jumped so high that his elbow hit the backboard, which freed the ball for a second, but freed it to himself, and then he dribbled down the field, around the court, and made a basket.
It was amazing. It's already being plagued as block of the year.
It very well might be.
And LeBron loved it. He actually said, man, that's good. That's good. The Memphis Grizzlies are on a roll. They've won nine in a row. They beat the Lakers and the Clippers on this trip to L.A., Morant's, but he is fantastic.
He's a player.
He really is. And you know what? We were talking about this with Lee Ellis last week. The weird thing about this Grizzlies team is they can find a way to win without Ja Morant. When he was hurt, they were still winning games.
Yeah.
And we all remember if I have to take you back, remember this was the kid from Murray State that led the Murray State Racers in the NCAA tournament.
It's a made-up school if I ever heard one.
Yes, they are. The Racers, and their logo is a horse because of Kentucky being in the state.
Yeah.
But he was one of the bright stars of the NCAA tournament
back in 2019, I think. I think it was, yeah, because I think that was the year he was drafted. Because he's only been in the league a handful of years. But he's magnificent. That was a great block.
Yeah. What and then just one more added good was, the, you know, Klay Thompson did return.
And he did.
And he played well, 17 points in his first game back.
That's right. That's right.
And you'll take it.
You get rolling along pretty quickly. It's funny, too, because Golden State had gone, like, they had lost to, like, New Orleans. They were on this road trip. And they were just like, closing out this road trip. And then they get back home and they get Klay Thompson. And it's like, yes, feeling good now.
I mean,
look out, NBA.
Just an embarrassment.
They trounced Cleveland. And Cleveland's a good team. Cleveland's not a great team, but Cleveland's a pretty good
team. No, it's a solid team.
It's a solid team. And they trounced them.
Yeah. It's just an embarrassment of riches for the Warriors right now.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
What a great addition Klay Thompson is. Give me a break.
It's just not fair, really.
It really isn't fair. What's the bad of the day?
I left it here. It's not really bad. But, you know, we were having fun with it last week, and we're going to continue having fun with it this week. So our long national nightmare, Tony, is over.
Is it?
For now.
Okay.
An Australian judge reinstated Novak Djokovic's visa.
That's right.
And ordered him to be released from his hotel jail cell.
Yeah.
Within 30 minutes of his decision.
Yeah. They were trapping him in a hotel, keeping while he was appealing this COVID situation.
Right.
He was trapped in this non-suite hotel, they wanted you to know. They wanted you to know he wasn't getting special treatment. He was being put in this one. How would you like to be the owner of that hotel where it's constantly on the internet? Like, it's disgusting. It's awful. He's going to really hate staying there. He's not getting special treatment. By the way, your next visit to Melbourne, please stay at the blah, 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 blah.
That's right.
You know, when we finally do open it up for tourists.
Maybe it's government housing.
Yeah, maybe it is.
So. I don't know. But here's the kicker. Right?
So what does it mean?
So right now, this is what it means. If you just look at the, he essentially is a free man, right? His dad can no longer describe him as Jesus.
Yeah, you know, can't make the Jesus comparison.
Can't make the Jesus comparison. He can play in the Australian Open.
But as
government lawyer Christopher Tran pointed out, and he told the judges after the ruling, that the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship, Migrant Services, and Multicultural Affairs, Alex Hawke, he will consider whether to exercise a personal power of cancellation.
So that guy has got the choice to deport him if
yes.
he wants to?
Yeah.
Now, at that moment, could anybody step in and stop that? Is it stop with this Hawk guy?
I don't know.
That it?
I mean,
it buck
sounds,
stop with him?
It sounds to me it's like an executive decision. That if he says, nope, he didn't fit the criteria, he's out.
I got to be honest with you. I would lose sleep over this. If
you're Hawk,
to make this.
Yeah, Alex Hawk?
I would lose sleep over this. To try to figure out if the world's best tennis player should be allowed to stay in your country to compete in one of the biggest events your country has, or to deport him and make super international news. I don't know if I'd want to make that decision. I would be scared I'd made the wrong one.
Yeah.
Because if the buck stops with him, I mean, nobody could step in and be like, if I say he can stay, he stays. If I say he has to go, he has to go. Man, I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want that gig. I'd be like the guy that had to hand the death penalty on SMU and have a heart attack.
And the whole thing is just a mess. It's just like a...
I know.
I mean, I don't really watch the Australian Open anyways because it's, you know, it's on.
Yeah, it's on like
midnight.
2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. But this makes it interesting. I mean, you're wanting to see what happens. Like, is he going to play? Is he not going to play?
Yeah.
Is he going to get deported? I mean, this is the most I think we've ever talked about the Australian Open 2 weeks before it actually happens.
Yeah, no kidding.
So.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story.
Yeah. Until for now, I just keep it in the bad.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the whole story is funny.
All right. What's the dumb of the day?
I actually have two dumbs, and they both belong to the Giants.
Okay.
The New York Football Giants.
New York Football Giants.
So the first one, and it will be quick. Patricia Traina, who's the editor of GiantsCountry.com for Sports Illustrated.
Okay.
She had pointed out that the Giants did not have enough cap space this past weekend to carry a full 53-man roster.
What? Isn't there a person on the payroll that is responsible for just that?
Well, that would be, you know, I guess I'll fingers point to Dave Gettleman, yeah, the general manager.
He might have a personal cap guy that deals with, like...
Well, everyone's assuming Dave Gettleman is out. That he's either he's going to be fired or he's going to resign. We'll
somebody's got to fall for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they only had 51 men on the roster yesterday.
Good God. Okay, do the second one because I might add something on it if this second one isn't the second one.
Well, the second one is the play of the season.
Okay. I was just going to add this if you didn't add this, but go ahead.
So. If you didn't catch it, and I believe you probably didn't unless you were cruising social media, the Giants ran possibly the worst play or the worst play call, I think, in the history of the NFL.
And this would beat that crazy Miami Dolphins
from
a couple of years ago?
That play actually looks intelligent now, Tony.
Because this was head-scratching and vocal screaming at the same
time.
This
was, you know what, I don't care about football anymore.
Right.
There's no analytics behind this. Just so you guys know what it is. The Giants are on their own four-yard line, meaning they're 4 yards away from getting a safety.
Yep, they're having trouble a safety.
It's third and nine, and the play call was a quarterback sneak.
A quarterback sneak. And this was after they had ran a quarterback sneak on second down.
Yes.
And he ran it again. Because he said at the end of the game, Joe Judge did, he said he didn't want to risk getting a safety on a running play. They had a running play against, was it Philadelphia? Last week, yeah, Philadelphia. Where they ran the ball and they got tackled for a safety. So he didn't want that to happen again. Yeah. So on second down, he ran the quarterback sneak, which I don't like it. That's more of a first down call to give you see if you can get a little workable room.
Yeah, give yourself some breathing
area. It's excusable.
Area.
It's forgettable, right? It's forgettable. You could run it on second down and not get anything, and it's forgettable.
But third and nine
is immortalized as one of the dumbest things in the history of the game. I mean. Like, that's okay, how quickly you go from forgettable to Hall of Fame bad.
And again, like you said, I understand, like, you know, if you're backed into your 5 yards or less, right?
Right.
You're going to run, like you said, you're going to run the ball probably on first down, maybe even second down to try to give yourself a little room. To not even attempt a pass.
On third down.
On third and nine. Because even if you decide to run a play.
Even
like
if it's a short pass.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't get the first down, like, you've given yourself a little bit of breathing room. It's okay.
I mean... Are they that inept as a team? I don't know. That's why I could not wait to talk about it. Because I watched that play a couple of times. Because I tried to make sense out of it, and I can't.
Yeah. My father was tweeting me yesterday. He was texting me about the Steelers. He's like, say, way to go, Steelers. And then he said, he was on the Joe Judge, like, give him one more year train, because he's a huge Giants fan. He said to me, I'm done with Joe Judge. That's it. And I go, yeah. He goes, because the next coach, he goes, that would be 5 and 8 seasons. And at first I thought, that's not right. That's, is it? That they've had 5 head coaches in 8 seasons? And then I looked it up. He's absolutely right. Like, in terms of interim coaches, like, who've taken over, like, they had Pat Shermer, they had Bob McAdoo, it would start at Tom Coughlin, Bob McAdoo, then like Pat Shermer, and then another interim coach, and then Joe Judge.
Is it sad that the only thing I remember about Bob McAdoo's reign as the Giants coach was his oversized suit?
Oh, yeah. And the other thing was he benched Eli Manning.
Yeah.
He was the guy that ended the streak. He was the guy that ended Eli's
And then started him the next week.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, ended the streak for no good reason at all, and then went, yeah, why not? Yeah, let's start it all up again. Yeah.
Start a new streak, Eli.
I was amazed by that number that they've had 5 and 8 seasons, because, again, like, that just doesn't seem right, right? Like, that seems like Cleveland Brown-esque, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And then when I looked it up, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, they had a guy there for a year. And then I went and I texted him. I said, I've only had 3 in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
What is this 5 and 8 years you speak of?
Guys you've had I'm trying to remember all the coaches the Giants have had since I was a little kid, and my dad liked the Giants. Like, from Ray Hanley to Ray Perkins. Like, to forget Bill Parcells. That was the good times.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, and all of the other terrible coaches that they've had.
Then Jim there was Fossil.
Jim Fossil was the head coach there. Tom Coughlin got him a couple Super Bowls.
Yeah.
So that's,
well,
that, you that put was
Tom,
a good era.
You put Tom, like, in the same category as, like, Bill Parcells. Right? As far as Giants history goes,
giving him the Super Bowls.
I'm not saying resume or overall as a quality coach.
Parcells is the best coach they've had.
Yeah.
Coughlin's up there. I mean, he's got two Super Bowls against the Patriots, nonetheless. That's pretty good.
He did a great job.
Pretty good. Like, what do I always say? If you can get two or three in your lifetime, like, God, like, that's really all you need. Like, that's all you really should expect. Like, you shouldn't expect five or six in your lifetime. You get three or four, that's a lifetime's worth of championships in this league. So if you can get a coach that can get you two, yeah, it's Hall of Fame. Put him in the Ring of Fame. Exactly.
Yeah. 3rd and 9, quarterback sneak.
That's not going to get you in the Ring of Fame. Joe Judge. That's awesome. Golly, it's terrible. What a terrible team. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Emory Hunt's going to join us in a couple minutes. We'll talk to him about the NFL playoffs and the Week 18 fun that we had as we continue with the Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with this Wake Up Call SportsMap Radio. So again, last night's game did not end in a tie. And I was thinking about this yesterday throughout the game. And I was talking to you about this before the show. Did the NFL have to send a memo to both teams to say, hey guys, we may not have to tell you this, but we feel like we should remind you, do not be running plays, kneeling down, punting to each other for 60 minutes of football. You have to play football. They may not have had to say that to either team, because, my God, both teams look like they were ready to kill each other rather than do the gentlemanly thing and play for a tie. They really were playing hard. I mean,
if there was ever a question that these teams, I mean, if you bring up that conspiracy theory, like, oh, it's going to end in a tie. Like, if that game did end in a tie yesterday, it would have been the most unlikely tie to have ever occurred.
Oh, without question. There was a guy on one of the Steelers boards that wrote, stop thanking the Raiders. They were playing for the tie after they got the first down at the 2-minute warning, because he was talking about how they were running the ball.
Yeah.
And then they got 10 yards up the middle. But I'm like, no, if you're a Steeler fan, it doesn't matter what their mindset was. They kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
Like, they may have done so reluctantly. You may think that, oh, they hated every second of it, going out there to kick a field goal to win the game. But they did. They did their job. They did it.
They didn't seem to hate it.
They didn't. And you know what? That's a great point. They didn't seem to hate winning that football game.
No.
Right?
I think it was this. I think they were content with the tie. When they got the ball and there was, 2 minutes left. I mean, so, you know, let's talk about it from the minute on. From a minute on, when they got the ball and they're just running plays up the middle, I think they were content with the tie, but I think the larger thing for them was, like, I don't want to screw anything up to give them a chance.
Well, that's the
thing,
right?
I don't want to lose the ball. I don't want a catastrophic mistake at this point, because if we can just tie, we're in the playoffs. And I think that played a bigger role. I don't think for them it was about the win until Staley decided to call a timeout and gave them a little breath of life. It was like, okay, well, let's figure out an actual play now.
I think all of us have a little bit of narcissism when it comes to our team, right? I think a lot of us kind of think the world revolves around us and our needs and our, right? And I think in this case, this poster is in the mindset of, well, the Raiders didn't really want to help the Steelers. They weren't thinking about the Steelers at all. Like, that's the thing. When you think the universe revolves around you and every team is thinking about you, that's not how it works. The Raiders, you're right. The Raiders weren't playing for a tie at the end of the game because they wanted to screw the Steelers over. That's not how they think.
No.
You're right. What they were trying to avoid was an interception return for a touchdown or an interception return for a game-winning field goal.
No, just, I mean, interception.
Like, any circumstance when you throw the football. What's the old saying? Three things happen. Two of them are bad.
Yeah, for the Raiders. I mean, look at their overtime, right? The Raiders took, 7 minutes to march down the field and only got a field goal out of it. The Chargers took, two.
Right.
You know, and then you're looking at that, Justin Herbert is on fire. He's found a rhythm. You know, Mike Williams just broke out for a huge play. All those things are working. You're working in your mind that, you know, Chris Collinsworth said it best last night when he said the wide receivers are getting tired.
Exhausted, yeah.
So are those defensive backs.
Sure they are.
And the Raiders know that you know, you're going to have mismatches on defense because these guys are getting tired of just covering. I mean, it was 64 pass attempts, and let alone that last drive, that final drive in the fourth quarter with 19 plays in 2 minutes. That was an exhausting. I was tired watching that.
It has to be right up there with one of the greatest touchdown drives, late touchdown drives in the history of the game, because of how many plays were done, how many fourth down conversions there were, and not only that, it wasn't fourth and twos. They were converting on short passes.
Tens.
They were fourth and tens.
Every time.
Absolutely nuts.
My God, right? you can't score on first and ten. You can't complete third and ten. Come on,
it really was remarkable. But again, okay, if you're the Raiders, right? Like Derek Carr said at the end of the game, we never thought about a tie. We played to win. I think a little bit of that is false. I think there was always a feeling on both sidelines that a tie was absolutely acceptable. Right, because it may get the other team in, but it gets us in too, right? So if you're the Raiders and they call timeout and you say, "Oh no, we would have kicked the field goal anyway," no, you wouldn't. If Josh Jacobs doesn't get 10 yards, on that run, you're not kicking the field goal.
No, you may be running another running play.
You are taking a knee or you're running a running play to see what happens, but that's it. You don't run the risk of anything. You evaluate every risk, okay? And then you gauge accordingly. All right, it may seem unlikely, but you could have a blocked field goal attempt return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You could also hand off to a running back. He could also fumble and have it returned for a touchdown.
And I don't care if that kicker was, has never missed a kick in Vegas.
Yeah.
You're not putting him out there. Like even my son was watching, he's like, "Oh, they can kick a field goal from there. They're past 50." I'm like, "You're looking at a 65-yard field goal."
He's not kicking
right
a 65-yard field goal. You're right.
I mean, again, I don't care
it could
if it's
be
a
returned
dump
for a touchdown if it comes up short. Like there's 100 things that could happen.
Yeah,
like,
you play ultra conservative, and I wouldn't have been surprised had Staley not taken that timeout. And if they, say the Raiders did run one more play and got 5 yards, I wouldn't have been surprised if Derek Carr just either took a knee or just let the clock run out.
Sure, he would have. He probably would have. You're right. I think the circumstance of the Jacobs run allowed them to go for the win.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing too.
And it was the fact that Staley took a timeout that gave him time to evaluate what they can do.
Real quick, are you mad at the Raiders for kicking the field goal?
No.
No, and nobody should be.
I would have.
Because I would have too. Right? The competitive juices of that game, the sacrifices that you made, you want to get a win. You want to get a win. And no, and they weren't thinking about if we tie, we play the Chiefs. They weren't thinking of that either.
No, they weren't thinking of that.
You're putting too many thoughts, people out there on Twitter and social media. You're putting way too many thoughts into the thought process of just win the game for the 70,000 people that came here screaming their heads off.
Their mindset, win and we make the playoffs. Tie, we make the playoffs.
Right, exactly.
That was it.
But when they
didn't matter who they were going
to win the game, you take winning the game. The other part of it is, and this is, again, this is not in their mindset, but the other part of it is, if you're the NFL, if the Raiders just conceded the tie, right? Just like, let's say they just took a knee in the final 2 minutes of that last 2 minute drive and the Chargers said, "Great, we're not calling timeout either. So run it out, Raiders." There would have been a feeling of the league going, you guys didn't give it your all in the final 2 minutes, even if it meant beneficial to both of you. I think the fact that the Raiders said, "Yeah, we can kick a field goal now. We got 10 yards and it puts us in closer range." That made that decision easy. And yes, you go for the win. But don't put more thoughts in the heads that didn't need to be there. They just wanted to win the game. That's all. And they won the game. All right, Emory Hunt joins us next. We continue with Wake Up Call. ¶¶
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to Progressive Guest Line. Emory Hunt joins us, footballgameplan.com, talk about the playoffs and the Week 18, one of the most exciting weeks we had, and final weeks we've had in a long time. How are you, Emory?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Always good to talk to you. All right, let's start with the Colts for a second. I just think it's inexcusable for the Colts. At 9-6, they just needed to close out a little. Didn't even have to close out with two wins, and they failed to do so. That loss was inexcusable. What was going on in the last 2 weeks with Indianapolis that now puts them out of the playoffs?
Carson Wentz was going on. The fact that he can't supersede anything that doesn't go according to schedule or on schedule. And we said this all season long that Jonathan Taylor was the key cog in that offense, that football team. And if anytime you have to de-emphasize your quarterback, a guy that handles the ball every play, that tells you all you need to know about the quarterback in general. And so they needed Carson Wentz to step up big against the Raiders. He could do that. And he needed him to step up big yesterday against Jacksonville. He couldn't do that as well. Now, to his credit, he did step up on two occasions in a big way against Arizona, and that's all they really needed from him. But they couldn't even get that the last 2 weeks, which is why they're on the outside looking in.
That game last night with the Raiders and the Chargers, just incredibly hard fought. I mean, just with the fact that a tie would have gotten them both in, and neither team seemed to want that during regulation. And I was so impressed with the Raiders. I've seen this happen a couple of times with teams that where they're at some point late in the season where they're like, you know, we got to win out. And then they do win out, and then they become dangerous. Do you see the Raiders as possibly a dangerous team?
Not at all. This is a football team that got in based off the fact that, you know, a team like Baltimore collapsed because of the injuries and COVID situation. This is a decent team. They're not a good football team. We saw that last night. This is a team that just really couldn't get out of their own way. And I just don't see the Raiders being anything of a nice story of how they got in, and they're going to be one and done. Carr, to me, played skittish last night. Missed a couple of throws, had a chance to win the game in overtime with a throw. I just feel like his pocket presence isn't where it needs to be. And that defense worries me. So I see this as a one-and-done team. Good story, a great way to end the regular season, but they're going to be on the first thing smoking out the playoffs by next weekend.
For the past 20-plus years in the AFC, the top seed has been a pretty dominant force, whether it's the Patriots or Peyton Manning's Broncos or a Steelers team or the Chiefs over the last couple of years. But the Tennessee Titans now own that. Where are they amongst the AFC? Are they – with Derrick Henry, where would you put them as a one seed compared to everybody else in the playoffs?
Yeah, you say with Derrick Henry.
I did have to throw that caveat in, right?
It was with Ryan Tannehill. They are not that good of a football team. Ryan Tannehill is a step above Carson Wentz, you know, in terms of can you trust him to make key plays? I mean, they're in a dogfight yesterday with Houston. But now, if Derrick Henry comes back, and if Derrick Henry can be what he was earlier in the season and not a guy that's coming back off of an injury, then, yeah, you can have to worry about them. But we saw this team last year with a healthy Derrick Henry get bounced out the playoffs by the Baltimore Ravens. So, to me, I don't see them as a team that really has a chance to make some noise in the playoffs. Good team. And they've been able to run the football even without Derrick Henry, but I just don't trust Ryan Tannehill enough to really beat you in the playoffs. And I think that's what it really comes down to with a lot of these playoff teams. Do you trust them? Do you trust the Titans' defense? You know, and that, those are some serious questions I have about this Titans team. To me, the team to beat would be Kansas City.
I never want to take away a playoff appearance for anybody. You earned it. You went through the system and you got it. But the Steelers can't stop the run. They can't run the ball. They can't block. They have a 39-year-old quarterback. Defensively, they've got some problems. I can't think of a worse team entering the playoffs in the last couple of years than the Steelers, this version of the Steelers.
Yeah, and again, you talk about a team like the Raiders being one and done. I feel like that's Pittsburgh as well. That's a team that's going to get in, that has gotten in, and is going to be bounced out pretty quickly. Now, they do play Kansas City, and Kansas City would love to make this a track meet. They're running up against a Chiefs team that is making strides defensively, which puts that offense of Pittsburgh in peril, and a team on offense that really pushes the pace and tempo, and they've shown to be a little bit more balanced this year than we've seen. And so you have the best player on the field in Patrick Mahomes. You have a team that's getting better defensively against an aging quarterback and a pedestrian offense. That's not a good matchup at all.
Emery, help me with something here with San Francisco. In the last three seasons, mostly with Jimmy Garoppolo, they went to a Super Bowl, had a year where they really suffered a lot of injuries, and now we're making a playoff push with Jimmy Garoppolo. Why isn't Jimmy Garoppolo the answer there? Should he be, or are they still going to find a way to get rid of him so Trey Lance can take over?
Yeah, and there's a reason why they traded three picks to get up to get Trey Lance, because they understand what they have in Garoppolo. He's limited. One, you can't trust him because of injury, right? So if I can't depend on you to be out there 16, 17 games, then that's a problem, number one, or 18 games, that's a problem. And number two, we've seen him not play well or not handle pressure. Remember, they were down 17-0 in that ball game. What got them back in the game is the fact that they were legitimately running the football down the throats of the Rams. So it wasn't necessarily Jimmy Garoppolo. Then Jimmy Garoppolo stepped up later in the game, made some key throws that got them where they needed to be to ultimately win the game. But it was a run game. They got them back in their defense. Going up against a quarterback that you can't trust as well, and Matt Stafford, that got them back in that game. So I think the team sees the ceiling with a Jimmy Garoppolo and understands that, okay, we know he's limited. We know how far we can go with him, but that's why the Trey Lance pick was enticing to them, because they see a higher ceiling with a guy that has similar skill set in terms of athleticism, maybe a little bit more athleticism there. He has a stronger arm, so he's able to push the ball deeper down the field, more so than Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's proven to be a durable guy at North Dakota State, more so than what we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo. He hasn't played a full 16-game season, I don't believe, in his career. So there's a reason why they made the move, and even though Garoppolo's coming off of a decent end to the game, he wasn't the reason why they got back in that game, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, sure. And I do remember that run to the Super Bowl. I mean, there were playoff games he threw like 10 times. I mean, it wasn't, they ran the ball. You know, that was their main reason they got to that Super Bowl. On the flip side, Emery, Matt Stafford, you brought him up. This is a Rams team that's all in. They've taken every one of their draft picks and shoved them to somebody else in exchange for some level of star player to get on their team. But Stafford's going to be the reason why they move forward in the playoffs. How shaky is he right now, and how precarious is their run towards a Super Bowl with Stafford at quarterback?
He's very shaky. I said this when they made the move to get him. They just got a stronger arm version of Jared Goff. And if he doesn't get to the Super Bowl, which we saw Goff do in that same offense, then all this was for naught. He has to get to the Super Bowl, because that is, at worst, what Jared Goff did. Yes, he may be a better player than Jared Goff. I'm not disputing that. He definitely has better physical skills than Jared Goff, but they suffer the same issues, which is crumbling versus pressure. Prior to this season, Matthew Stafford was 8-67 against teams with winning records when he was with Detroit. 8-67. That tells you have no shot to win versus good teams with Matthew Stafford at quarterback. And guess what's in the playoffs? All good teams. So I worry about this team in their first matchup against the Cardinals because of Matt Stafford. If you're able to stop the run and make Matthew Stafford have to beat you throwing the football, that's a losing errand, in my opinion, for the Rams. Think about how the game ended last night. Odell Beckham has the guy beat by at least 6 yards. He underthrows a deep ball, which gets intercepted, and they lose the game.
Yeah, it really is amazing how that team is so all in with all of those picks that they don't have for a future to put it on the shoulders of Matt Stafford. On the flip side, Emery, what do you make of the Dallas Cowboys? And what do you make of the way they're playing as they head to the postseason as a 3 seed?
I think they're the team to beat in the NFC, to be honest. When everything is on point with Dallas, we know they can put the ball in the paint offensively. They got a great quarterback in Dak Prescott. They got a 1-2 punch in the backfield. And we saw against the Philadelphia Eagles, they have some good depth there as well. The offensive line is a bit up and down, but stable. Defensively, when they're out there with Micah Parsons and you know, playing with their starters, this defense can really get after it and turn the ball over. So they got all the makings to get deep into the playoffs and get through the playoffs into the Super Bowl. The biggest Achilles heel, and we've seen it sort of rear its head all throughout the season for Dallas, has nothing to do with their offense or their defense. It's their kicker, Greg Zuerlein.
Yeah.
He has to miss extra points and kick. So if it has to come down to him making a field goal, that's a coin flip to me, in my opinion. So it really needs to put it out of reach for them to have success and not depend on Greg Zuerlein. I don't know what happened to Zuerlein. He used to be, the Greg the Toe Zuerlein, the leg, Legatron, and he just kind of fell off. He was a really good kicker, a great weapon, and now you really can't trust him. That would be the only Achilles heel to me about this Cowboys team as they go into the playoffs.
All right, one quick question before we let you go. Emory Hunt, footballgameplan.com. With Green Bay, we talk about Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and whatnot. Is there something about Green Bay that does worry you a little bit as we begin the playoffs?
I feel like Green Bay goes through spurts of inconsistency on offense. I like their defense. People talk about Aaron Rodgers and everything like that, but, man, they really sputter in games at times. Then they'll get it going, and you can't afford that in the playoffs. And as much as we love Aaron Rodgers and the stats and him being a great player and arguably the best quarterback in football, I mean, he hadn't been to a Super Bowl since, 2009 or 11? Yeah. So he has an issue winning a big game. Think about it. Last year, the Bucs, Tom Brady threw, three picks in that game, and he still couldn't pull it out. So I worry about their offense. Their offense really has to hit the ground running. They have good weapons at wide receiver and in the backfield. They go too deep as well. Their defense is opportunistic. They're built like the Cowboys, but they don't play like the Cowboys, in my opinion.
Emory, always good talking to you, my friend. We got to catch up with you down the road as we get closer and closer to the Super Bowl. Thank you as always, my man.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. And that is Emory Hunt, footballgameplan.com. Really smart analysis as we get through the playoff teams and, always look ahead to the postseason coming up. Starts on Saturday and then, of course, running through Monday night in the opening round of the postseason. All right, it's Tony D, Ron Culver. It is Wake Up Call and Emory on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance or Progressive new home court explorer only at Progressive.com. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2N. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Rest in peace of Bob Saget. Saw that news yesterday. That was kind of sad. Full House, 65 years
old.
That's
a bit of a shocker.
Bob Saget is either America's dad or, as somebody else put it, the most crass comedian on the planet.
Yes.
He's very, very filthy on stage, but he is America's dad. With Full House.
He is.
So either way you want to put it, 65 is young.
I didn't see that one coming. You saw the news, Sidney Poitier died.
Right.
Right. I mean, was he 94?
I feel bad. I thought Sidney Poitier had already died.
Yeah. That was one of those, right?
I was like, oh, wait, wasn't he? That's one of those, what do we call the Mandela effects? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I had seen a tribute to Sidney Poitier after he passed away. And I was like, no, I guess I did not, because he just passed away. Yeah.
And who was the other one? There was another person who died yesterday of note. And it was the creator of Woodstock, Michael...
Oh,
something.
Yeah. Oh, God, you're killing
Michael
me.
Lang.
Michael Lang, yeah.
Michael Lang passed away. And he was 77. And I was like, that's another one of those. I was like, I'm sad for the family, but that kind of makes sense.
Right.
Especially Michael Lang, knowing what he... put it to his body back in the 60s and 70s, probably.
Yeah, that's right.
But Bob Saget, that one shocked me.
That was a shock to me.
Now, I know that there was, fortunately, there was no drug abuse found. They immediately came out and said that drugs wasn't an issue or wasn't the cause of death. But we know that he did have substance abuse problems when he was younger.
Sure.
Even the Full House days back, that's what made him a crass comedian. But yeah, That didn't sit well. I was like, wow. That one came out of left field.
Yeah, exactly. So Anyway, rest in peace to America's dad and, of course, one of our greatest actors, Sidney Poitier. To Sir with love. Rest in peace.
Yep.
Nevertheless, so this weekend we've got games on Saturday. We have games on Sunday. And we have the Monday night game as well. So we have got 3 days of playoff football. Do you think the NFL is going to regret putting the Steelers and the Chiefs on Sunday night? All of these are primetime games. All of these are individual games, not competing against anything else. But Sunday night has a prevalence, right? Like, it has a special place, right? Saturday games, you know, Sunday, but Sunday night, when we talk about the Steelers being one and done, how about a half and done? Can we phrase the term half and done? This game could be 28-0.
Maybe they'll shock the world, Tony.
Maybe. You never know. No. It's kind of the beauty of the postseason.
I don't think against the Chiefs.
They played them the day after Christmas. And they got blown out. Right? Well, again, you never know in the postseason, so I don't want to be the negative Nelly all the time.
But I'm with you.
It's really hard.
I'm with you on that one.
Listen, I learned my lesson with the Patriots. All those years, 20 years up. You know, this team runs the ball really well. They might be able to beat New England, and then New England will win 37-10. All those years with the Patriots, I was like, never again.
But, you know, I got to say this. I do like how they're spread out, though.
Yeah,
2 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, 1 on Monday. Give me that.
I like 3 days. Coming up next hour, Connor O'Gara is going to join us from Indianapolis. Get ready for Alabama, Georgia. We'll continue to look at the NFL next.